Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association, coming to you today from the SCCE regional meeting in Philadelphia. Apologies in advance for all the background noises that you may or may not hear. I'm joined today by Michael Johnson. Michael is the CEO of the Clear Law Institute and just finished actually giving a talk here at the meeting. Michael, thanks for talking to us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Adam.
So we're going to talk today about interviewing and interviewing techniques. You're a noted expert in that field, done a lot of talks about understanding whether or not somebody's telling the truth or not. So let's start there. How can you tell if someone is telling you the truth or lying?
So it's interesting. What researchers have found is that when trying to determine who's telling the truth and who's lying, people tend to either consciously or subconsciously focus on the body language of the witness. And so they're looking, you know, for stereotypical cues, like, is the person looking in the eye? Is the person fidgety? And it turns out that that's actually a terrible way to tell if someone's lying, because those are really just cues to nervousness. They're not necessarily cues to deception. And in fact, so the person who's telling the truth and is perhaps, you know, innocent of what they're being accused of doing, they may nevertheless be nervous. At the same time, the person who is guilty, even though they're likely nervous as well, they often take steps to mask the signs of nervousness. So, for example, they make sure they look you in the eye. They make sure they're not fidgety. So, you know, as far as the question, like, how is the best way to tell someone's lying? The best way is simply to listen. So there's actually been studies that have shown that people do better at spotting deception when they can just hear the person speaking as opposed to hearing and looking, hearing and seeing, because when they can see the person, they focus too much on like these body language cues that aren't accurate.
Interesting. That's interesting. It's sort of, to me, it's keeping of the parallel of orchestras now.
Yes.
Do auditions with a person behind the curtain so that you're really only listening to the music, not watching the performance and making judgments based on gender, race, other factors.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. So there's studies sort of in the context of investigative interviews that show similar dynamics where we have, unconscious biases that we bring to the table. So, for example, there's some researchers out of University of British Columbia that have found that as soon as the witness walks in the room, we make a gut instinct determination of, is that person a generally trustworthy person or not? Hmm. And as you might imagine, like, that gut instinct is often influenced. What they found is based on just looking at the person's face. Immediately upon seeing the person's face, you make this gut instinct determination. But that determination is often based on inaccurate mental shortcuts. So, for example, we tend to view people of other ethnicities as less trustworthy than our own ethnicity. We tend to view people who are more attractive as more trustworthy. Mm. There's even research that shows that people who have what are called baby face features, mm-hmm. which are described as a more rounded face, larger eyes, perhaps they subconsciously remind us of infants, we think of them as more trustworthy, more innocent. Criminal defendants who have baby face features receive shorter criminal sentences than other defendants. So there's a lot of research that shows that the average person does better at determining deception or truthfulness when they can't see the person. When they're only required to listen to what they say, that's how they best determine deception.
Fascinating. So when you're doing the interview, we talked about a common mistake, which is focusing too much on the visual cues, not what on the person is saying. Are there any mistakes when you're doing an interview with someone that you can make that can lead to you getting less information out of a person than you would want or you intended?
Yeah. And so I think that compliance investigators in general like do a pretty good job in preparing for the interview in the sense that they think through what are all the topics that they want to address. They think through the questions that need to be answered. The problem is when they go to the interview, they ask those questions in the order in which they're listed. And so what that results in is a lot of questions that are closed-ended questions. And instead, like my approach is I use an approach called the cognitive interview. And part of that is using this sort of funnel method technique where the first question is simply, what happened? And you're letting the witness do the talking. And if you're ever in search of a good, clever next question, it's simply, then what? Then what? Like, a lot of people think being a good investigator is about asking clever questions. It's not. It's largely about being a good listener and letting the person tell the story in their own words with little interruption from you.
Yeah, I guess part of the trap of having a really firm, long list of questions is you get so focused on answering those questions, you miss things somebody might tell you that would lead to a bunch of other questions because you don't want to not ask the ones you have.
Yes, and that actually brings up another mistake in the sense that oftentimes, so either people are just following along the list of questions, or they ask a question, and while the witness is answering, rather than 100% listening to the nuances of what they're saying, they're thinking about what's my next question. Because they think as soon as the witness answers, they have to be ready with that next clever question. When in fact, like, it's fine, just listen if you need, then take some time, take notes, and then think about where you want to go. But that's another sort of big mistake that people make.
So what techniques are likely to obtain more information from the witness? You know, you mentioned this sort of cognitive funnel, I think you said.
So the cognitive interview. So basically, I think, look, when I started as a lawyer at the Department of Justice, I learned how to interview people just from other lawyers who had been practicing for years. But then, and I think that's how most people in the workplace learn. But the problem is, so we learn, you know, so-called best practices. But the question is, well, where do they learn from? And so what can happen is a lot of bad techniques, a lot of bad beliefs about how to spot deception, how to question witnesses can get passed down through the generations. And so I got interested to see, well, is there any science out there? Are there any researchers who study what's the best way to question witnesses? What's the best way to assess credibility? And so it turns out that there are, and the technique that has gotten the most support is called the cognitive interview. And it was developed in the 1980s based on a U.S. Department of Justice grant. There's been over 50 peer-reviewed studies that have published results attesting to its effectiveness. And it's actually shown to gather about 50% more information for witnesses than standard interview protocols. And it also has turned out that makes it easier to spot deception, primarily because you're asking the witness to do a lot of talking and to talk about the event from different vantage points. So if they're being deceptive, it makes it harder for them to tell a story.
Because they have consistent to keep fabricating something ever more complex.
Exactly. And so it's a technique that has a lot of research behind it, but also has a lot of real-world applicability. So the UK outlawed the most common technique used in the US and in Canada for criminal investigations in 1984. And as a result of that, they've spent a lot of money, a lot of research on looking at other techniques. And since the mid-80s, like, every law enforcement officer in the UK has been taught the cognitive interview. And so there's a lot of not just research behind it, but a lot of real world application. So
interesting. So now let's go back before the interview takes place. We talked about the need to obviously find out what you want to find out, the virtues of having a robust set of questions versus following this much more cognitive technique. What else should people do to best prepare for an interview?
So, if a client calls me and says, okay, I've got a report through my helpline of potential compliance violation, I want you to investigate. So the first thing I do, I read the reports, typically maybe two or three sentences. And at that point, before I interview anyone, I start outlining my report. So I'm thinking through, what are the specific factual questions that need to be answered, right? Did Bob misclassify his time? Did Adam give $100 to the customs official when he was entering Mongolia? Right. I'm thinking through, like, what are the specific factual questions that need to be answered? And then that helps me brainstorm what are potential pieces of evidence. And for each witness, what are the topics that I need to address with them? So I create like an outline of, these are the different topics I need to address, with the first witness, which is oftentimes going to be the whistleblower or the complainant. And I think through that, but then as I said earlier, when I go, you know, I don't just ask those questions one by one. I use this cognitive interview, what happened, then what, and then use other elements of the cognitive interview to have them talk about the matter from different vantage points. But then after I interview the witness, then I read through my notes, extract the relevant information, put that into the outline. Then I read through the outline that helps me determine, okay, what new information have I learned? What topics do I need to address with the next witness and so on? So throughout the whole investigation, I'm continually building that report. So it makes my investigation go much more quickly because I'm focused on just answering those relevant questions. And it helps me see, are there any gaps in my evidence, gaps in my analysis, that type of thing.
So it's sort of like, you know, to use the oft-used jigsaw analogy, is you've got a jigsaw and you know what the picture of what you need to show, what happened or what not, and now it's going back to find all the pieces.
Yep.
Okay, and then one last question. Is there a better or worse place to conduct the interview?
So the main point there is that you want to conduct interviews in a place where other people cannot see who you're interviewing and for how long they're being interviewed. So, you know, if you show up and do the interviews in the glass conference room in the department, that's not a great choice. So sometimes, for example, I rent office space. There's several companies that rent office space by the day. Mm-hmm. And so I have the witnesses come to me if it's a sort of a small environment where people would see who's being interviewed. Now that also leads to the question of, what about phone interviews? Are they okay? So phone interviews are okay. You know, when I was a lawyer with the Department of Justice, we were taught, no, you can't do interviews by phone, under the theory that you have to like be in person so you can determine if they're lying.
Right, and see what they're doing and stuff like that.
Yeah, but as I've said, like, you know, the research hasn't supported it. In fact, shows that people are terrible at spotting deception in person. So, but that said, there is value. I prefer to do interviews in person just because it's a bit easier to establish rapport with the witness, but that could still, you know, could be accomplished by phone as well.
So one other question I had as we were talking now was, what about email asking questions back and forth with people? I would imagine the most sensitive stuff you don't want to do that way, but what about in terms of follow-up of say, you know what, I did think I should have asked this one sort of factual matter. Does that work, or is it still better to talk to the person?
It depends on the nature of the case and the nature of information you're gathering. But you're right in saying that the more sensitive information or the information where we think there's a possibility a person may lie or be deceptive, I'd rather speak with them because it's a lot easier to formulate a lie in writing and have time to think about it and carefully craft it than it is, you know, to do that verbally.
Right. When you've got somebody there who can ask the follow-up question and you get more time to think it through.
Yep.
Well, Michael, thanks. I think you've given us a lot to think through today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen and hope the background noise wasn't too much. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.